This is Mike TV episode 58 for the week of December 11th, 2020. We are your Mike TV hosts, Lisa and Dean. Hello, Dean.
Hey, Lisa, how are you doing today?
Fantastic, my friend, as always. Thank you. And hey, guess what?
What?
This is a very exciting episode of Mike TV. We have a very special guest joining
Jeff
us.
Jeff Leboff?
Today. Oh, I wish Jeff Leboff. Okay, almost as good as Jeff Leboff joining us today. Oh my God. Oh, it's finally happening. It's finally happening. Tim Andrews is here.
Yay. Tim Michaels.
What's up? Nobody knows who Tim Michaels is as listens to this show.
We all know who Tim Michaels is.
Yes.
Welcome, Tim. Thanks. Thanks for finally coming on your little sister show.
It's not my show, but I'm happy to be on it.
Well, it's a show that you so generously host for us. So we thank you.
You're like our executive producer.
Yes.
You're on our network.
That's right. Yes. We're under the umbrella.
Of Soon Radio to be Lab. Under the umbrella of what's yours called? Silver Streak?
Hyperdrive.
Hyperdrive.
Oh. I've listened to power. Every episode.
I'm going
to
start one called Auxiliary Power.
Hey, I've listened to every episode of Hyperdrive. It's very good. Everybody should be listening to it. It's super funny. You guys are really clever. Great conversation. Loved the Thanksgiving episode. Of course, I loved the Friends episodes that you talked about. The Brad Pitt. I was like, why isn't he talking about Brad Pitt? And then when you got to it, I was like, yep, that's the best one.
Yeah, if you like podcasts with high production value and a lot of celebrity guests, go to Radio Labyrinth. Take that one out. But if you like things without any of that, come to Hyperdrive. And
Dean, aren't you kind of like being like Michael Jordan, except for Michael Jordan, like pretend that Michael Jordan, when he went back to the NBA, also stayed on the Barons.
I'm more like Michael Jordan on the Barons. Maybe even Michael Jordan with, you know, the sad crying Jordan meme. That's more like what Hyperdrive is. Yeah. So we're still Michael Jordan, but we're like the sad crying Jordan.
Okay.
It's still Jordan.
Anyway, your most recent episode on wokeness was super hilarious. So great Appreciate job it. To you guys.
Oh, you're getting the social issues, huh? I'm going to have to check it out.
There you go. Yeah, now I knew I'd hook you one way or the other. Next week, we're going full QAnon. So
but really, it's too late for that. TikTok.
So we have Tim on today to talk about the season finale of Fargo, season 4. Aired, well, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, but here we are. We're ready to talk about it.
Yeah, Lisa, this might have been a mistake because I think Tim and I are going to completely gang up on you as far as our opinions versus what yours is going to be.
Okay, so I have a plan.
Okay.
And I have a great email from Roby where he also sent out a great tweet with an interview with Noah Hawley, which I'm sure neither of you read. I think there's a lot to be forgiven there for this, what you... We'll get to your theory. Let's talk about the good stuff first, okay? Can we just talk about what we liked about it, and then we'll get into the argument. Surely you both liked the Josto Ornetta stuff, right? I mean, that was fantastic. Can we just break that down a little bit?
What part?
So Jason Schwartzman and the nurse, when they are basically sentenced to death at the end.
I didn't like that.
Why?
To me, that was the most Coen Brothers part of it, which I liked, especially just the kind of comedic. In fact, at first, when they're driving him out and walking him through the field, I got, you know, I was thinking, oh, it's going to be a full Miller's Crossing thing. Jason Schwartzman's just going to start crying, pleading. And I liked that it went the comedic route, especially with her of just, what's your last request? Can you kill him first so I can watch?
Best line of the whole series.
That was kind of like Burn After Reading. It gave me that feel. Just the absurdity of it. I loved it up until that point, but I didn't like the fact that Jason Schwartzman got killed. And I didn't like I don't care about that crazy chick, but I didn't like Jason Schwartzman getting killed. I didn't think he deserved to be killed.
He was actually one of my favorite characters throughout the whole season.
Mine too.
I love Jason Schwartzman. I like the fact that he played, you know, he's this guy that should have never been in charge, But right. just because of and maybe that is what makes that death and the whole situation between him and the nurse funny, because if it wasn't for her, he would have never been in charge.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I did like kind of that poetic ending to it. But yeah, he was fantastic.
He had to go though. He had to die. And it was a perfect, it was a fitting way for his death.
I didn't like the fact that he was basically had no, he didn't kill his brother. His brother accidentally kills himself.
But it's such a preposterous story. Yeah, of course they're not going to believe him. They knew he wanted him dead.
Yeah, Gaetano's death to me really reminded me of the whole burn after reading, of like the when Brad Pitt gets shot in the closet, but just the almost suddenly, you know, the suddenly you don't see it coming and just bam, shot in the head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
Yeah. I thought it was, I don't know. They didn't foreshadow enough to me that the concierge or conciliary would make that turn at the end, especially because he seemed like such a good friend of Dr. Senator. Yeah. And, and like, they seem to be kind of the ones on the up and up, and he of course makes the deal with Chris Rock, which makes that heel turn even more bitter. I just didn't see that from that character.
Yeah. Let me agree with you 100% there. I loved that guy the entire season. And then the last half hour of the final episode, he's a fucking asshole.
Yeah.
I didn't like that. I thought it was a betrayal.
But think about it from his character's perspective. Josto's been a pain in the ass the whole time to him. And now all of a sudden Gaetano's dead. And he fell on his gun and shot himself. It sounds like a bullshit story.
But he wasn't the boss.
Josto really wasn't the boss either. The higher ups from New York or whatever were. So all he had to do was say, this guy killed his brother. And boom, the orders were given from somebody. Even that, he said that to Chris Rock, you know, you see me, but you don't see the person behind me and the person behind him and everyone that comes after me.
Well, when did this take place?
It was a great line also.
The 50s.
Do they say a year?
1950, I think, is when the whole thing takes place.
All right. So
in 51, it ended. Yeah. So it was a year.
Appalachian didn't happen until, and I don't remember exactly, the late 50s or the early 60s. Appalachian was a meeting that the five families organized near Binghamton, New York, and they got tipped off and the police raided it. But I guess the five families really came into being in their power in the 40s and 50s, I guess, in New York. So that makes sense. They controlled everything west of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, if you had a mafia in Kansas City or if you had the mafia in Buffalo, they had to listen to them. Chicago had its own thing, but they still had answered in New York. So that's believable.
I think the concept of the mafia thing made sense, but like we were just saying, it was more that it's as if they needed at least one scene a couple episodes earlier to show that character was being somewhat tempted by leadership. He just had never shown that he wanted to be the boss or was even trying to act like the boss.
I don't think he wanted earlier it. I think he acted right by the family.
At the end, he acted so strong at the end to where it was like, where did that come from?
In the position to be, he had.
But
to...
it's like Revenge of the Sith, where they're walking and talking, and there's a blue screen, and they're walking through a building, and they're talking about all these adventures you've never seen. We don't see that guy become the leader that he becomes in the last half hour of the show. So I agree with Dean's point there.
I think he's an interim leader, and he was a smart enough man to know the role he had to play. And I don't think he was vying for power in any way. He was the I know the right thing to do by the family, and brothers don't kill brothers. And he was by the book mafia man.
It doesn't matter what he thinks. It matters what New York told him to do.
Yeah.
We don't see that.
Okay, fine. We didn't really see how Fargo got involved either, except for some, you know, blinky blink shootout. And then, you know, but we know Fargo got called in and got involved a few episodes back.
All right. Well, what do we think about the ending of Chris Rock?
Well, wait, can I just say one more thing about the nurse and Josh?
Oh, yeah.
you know, I thought it was great because the whole time it was so on the nose. There was no disguising it. We are taking you to your death. And even the audience, you're like, are they going to get away somehow? Is this going to, are the tables going to turn? No, this is just straight up taking them to their execution. And the whole car ride, the banter between them, it was amazing. It was fantastic. It was hysterical in the face of death to be laughing that hard, I thought. And then her final words. And also, you know, she saw that death guy in the mirror.
Yeah. Right
before. Yeah. What the hell was that all about?
Oh, it's, you know, Noah Hawley's got to throw in one random ass shit in every season of everything he does. It's like the UFOs in season two.
No,
or the box with the finger in season three.
I believe that is like the death, you know, that she sees death, kind of like the Ethel Reda's family does.
Give me a minute.
You good?
All right.
You can keep talking. Sure.
All right. Well, now, okay. So let's move into Loy then, Dean, because I know Tim will have some words about it, but I want to dig a little deep into. So Loy goes to visit that guy. Why? We don't know his name. the guy who becomes the leader of the de facto leader.
Other Italian guy. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not Gaetano. Ebal. Yes. Ebal. Mm-hmm. So Chris Rock thinks it's over and they're going to be able to be handshake and back to business as normal. But no, he puts Loy in his place. And I have to say that was pretty satisfying. And then even.
Was it satisfying to you? I thought it was shitty. I hated that. I mean, like, it made sense, but I hated the fact that, like, Chris Rock seemed like he won. And we've talked about this the whole time is like, we knew Chris Rock wasn't going to win.
Right. We knew the Italians were going to win.
We knew the Black Mafia was not going to win because of just what we've seen in the future.
Right.
But I hated the fact that he just basically gets like fucking swindled and put in his place.
He needed a dose of that because he hasn't gotten it all season. He's been the swinging dick the whole time. So yeah. I thought that was a good. But then for him to go home and be reunited with Satchel. Oh my God, I was bawling. What a performance. What a performance. And then his wife comes in, and I loved every minute of that reunion. And I am so glad we got that. I mean, and I knew when it was that joyous and that happy, I was like, oh shit.
Why did
their shoes about to drop?
Why did he get shot?
Because Zellmer was wanted revenge.
No, it's what? Because she knew or she knew that he sold them out
to Timothy
by telling the cop to kill all of them, basically, because they didn't want anything to come back to him for ratting them out. He basically just gave him the kill order of kill Oliphant, kill both of the women fugitives as well.
Well, I hated both of those women, so I'm glad that the one got killed. But I don't like that. I hated that. It pissed me off.
Oh, it pissed me off bad.
And to me, what made me so upset about it was it was so predictable. It was so, like, I love the reunion scene, but when he starts coming back, he's got the bag of oranges in any kind of mafia movie are not good.
I have in my notes, oranges. Yes,
as soon as he's walking up there, I was like, oh, Zelmar's going to show up and shoot him or stab him or something. Like, he's dead.
I am like, oh, that Noah Hawley, he got me again. I was so caught up and I knew something was going to happen, but I had forgotten all about Zellmer.
No, well, my whole thought was like, she hasn't shown up.
Correctly. No, I just forgotten about her. I forgot all about her. So she showed up and I was like, oh shit, I forgot about her.
I fast forwarded to the rest of it after that.
Oh, asshole. Go, God, Tim, why?
So before we get into your whole, you know, thing you're going to brag about, because you quote unquote called it, although it was clearly obvious the whole time. I know I've been telling you I don't think this, but I knew it was true. I just told you how I don't like it. But here's what I didn't like about the whole finale was that to me, it felt, and I know, and I did read the article that Roby sent and tweeted us about how there was supposed to be more, but because of COVID, some of it got cut. It clearly felt as if there should have been at least one more, or if this was supposed to be a whole episode, the whole episode to me felt like an epilogue. Like, I wish I would have just made the last episode, episode 10, an hour and 45 minutes long and done a full episode. Or they should have at least, even if they would have cut it to before the girl talks to Loy about the ring, then at least it would have been a full episode. This whole thing felt like, hey, here's the aftermath. It just felt short. It felt like it wasn't complete. There was no actual arc or story of the entire episode. It was just like, hey, here's what happened to everybody. These people died. This person died. This person died. And this person shows up to turn into a person who he's nothing like as a child.
All right. This is season 4 of Fargo. This show has a formula. This is no surprise that we know people
the finales are usually way more. Up.
Yeah, they're usually way better.
The finales are usually way better. And we talked about this even with when we linked it to Legion the other week, as far as usually like with Legion, the series finale, we felt when we were going into that finale, like, how in the hell are they going to wrap all this up? And that finale literally wrapped the entire thing up and put it all together in an awesome story for one hour.
And so did this.
Tim agrees with that episode he never saw.
Tim never even saw Legion. Get out of here.
He watched two episodes before he noped out. But
I watched four or five, actually.
Okay, well, there you go. But yeah, I just felt that the whole final episode just seemed not complete to me. Just didn't seem complete to me.
So I'm going to share this little screenshot I took of my TV because like a dork I am. This is from near the end, right before Loy is killed, right before he shows up with the bag of oranges. The family is, there's this happy family scene. Satchel's sitting on the sofa reading a book. The older brother, who, by the way, I love that older brother.
Pay attention to the book he's reading.
I know. That's why I got this up.
Make sure you're looking at this right now. Listeners, make sure you're paying attention.
This is why I have it on the screen. I know you all are seeing it first. But you know the scene I'm talking about. Satchel's reading the book. The brother's playing the trumpet. They're all just having a happy moment. And the book that Satchel's reading, I couldn't quite make it out. So I took a picture of my TV screen and then blew it up. And sure enough, it's How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. Satchel's reading that book at 10 years old. I was like, there's no way in hell he's not Mike Milligan. There's no way.
Dale Carnegie gave him the book. Did he not?
When?
Didn't they at the house sit down at a table with Dale Carnegie when they were having dinner?
In the Wizard of Oz episode. Last episode.
No, well, the episode where, and I'm bad with names, but where the rabbi, they were at the halfway house, right?
Yeah, where it's in the black and white, the Wizard of Oz, where it's black and white.
Where they have the tornado.
They're at the boarding house, and Dale Carnegie's at the table.
Oh, that was supposed to be Dale Carnegie?
Or somebody selling the books, but I think it was Dale Carnegie.
Wow.
Or the guy that's talking about the book.
Tim Andrews blowing your mind, paying more attention than Lisa.
You have redeemed yourself, Tim. Good job.
Well, I pay attention to that book a lot because that is the book that Charles Manson read in prison, which allowed him to become who he was.
And did you notice Satchel reading it when you watched the season finale of Fargo?
Yes.
Oh, bullshit. You did not.
Well, yeah. I didn't notice that, but I remember that he got it from Dale Carnegie.
That is cool. That is a cool touch. Nice going, Holly. And then, of course, the button on the end is actually the very first scene of season 2, right?
No, it's clearly after season 2 because he's only got the one guy who already looks beat up.
Yep.
I'm thinking this is definitely after all that.
But he's driving down the same road that he walked as a child and
I'm assuming.
He was having that memory. I loved that. I would have loved more. Sure, I would have loved that.
And they said they originally planned to have more. In fact, it sounds like they even filmed more, but they cut it cuz it wasn't complete. I would have actually assuming they're not gonna, and it sounds like they're not going to. But if they were going to do a season 5 and have almost like a Mike Milligan season, you know, a full-on Mike Milligan prequel season, which it doesn't sound like they're going to do. I know in his interview, he said that, like, I don't think it would be a good idea to, like, have this whole story and then cut to Mike Milligan. But I think I would have totally appreciated they could somehow cram this in on episode 10 and basically episode 11 would have been – a Mike Milligan episode. Like, if they would have had a Mike Milligan episode, that would have been a really sweet ending to the season. And it would have made sense. It wouldn't feel like it was cut on or just added on. I think it would have made more sense. I'm telling you, I just hated that. I hated the kid that played him. The kid that played him as a kid was not Mike Milligan. He sounded half dumb.
Let me interject. The guy was an aluminum siding salesman who had the book, and he was talking about Dale Carnegie.
Okay, thank you. Thank
but he did
you,
get
Tim.
The book from there. But you, yeah, so he did get the book earlier.
But, okay, so I didn't catch it in that episode, probably because I was so caught up in all the, you know, the Wizard of Oz imagery, so I didn't catch that, but definitely caught him reading it in the finale and thought that that was just the Mike Milligan capper. Can we talk, are we going to move off of, are you going to just keep beating up on this kid, or can we talk about Ethel Rita for just a second? Because if my only, I think, bone to pick about this episode is how they wrapped up the Ethel Rita stuff.
Where she's just giving a report the whole time?
She's giving a report both to her family, but then to, like, us, the audience. I don't really know, like, what that meant at the end, where she looked a little older and she was dressed nicely and she got up and walked away with suitcases. Like, she had one, like, she was giving a formal interview or something out of a hotel or, and what was that?
I don't know.
I would have liked a little more explanation around that.
I want to know why the crazy nurse who knew that the girl across the street knew her secret and reported her didn't act on it.
She did. She tried, remember? And she, the ghost scared her.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then she was under, and then the house was under protection by Loy's son. So she really couldn't get to her.
No.
And then
Loy's son didn't help at all. She walked right into the house while he was there, asleep with a shotgun on his chest.
Right.
No,
Vince
I know screamed, that. I'm
Vince
talking
screamed
about the
all
next...
hell and walked out without being hurt at all. It was made no
I
sense.
I know that was terrible. But the next day when she came over and confronted her on the porch, or maybe it was before that, but
yeah,
he was
before that.
And Ethel Rita stood right up to her, which I loved. And but he was also right there. I would have liked to see more between them too. I loved him. I ended up loving him. All right. Is there anything else to say about Fargo? Okay. Do you want to rank the seasons? Do you think four was better than, you've seen them all so recently. Do you think four was better than three?
Yeah, overall, I really liked season four because I liked the actors. And I thought the Chris Rock, Jason Schwartzman, Gaetano, the Italian actor who played Gaetano, Crazy Eyes.
Yeah.
That dude is amazing. Yeah. I'm telling you, I could watch that dude intimidate anybody. Like, he's just a scary dude. Like, every time he's on screen, I'm waiting for him to fucking just like crush somebody's skull with his bare hands.
As much as I love Carrie Coon, I think four was better than three. Do you think four was better? Tim, do you think four was better than three?
I think it goes 1, 2, 4, 3.
Yeah, I can see that. Although two, I still have the issue with the whole UFO thing.
Yeah, but that's the only thing I had an issue with in that season.
Yeah.
Season three, I didn't really like. I mean, it got so tedious.
I hated the ending of season three.
So did I.
Yeah.
Okay. I hate you both.
What's your ranking, Lisa?
Three,
2, 4, 1.
No, I was going to go 1, 4, 2, 3.
Oh, well, so you're still putting three at the end, so whatever.
I mean, they're all so close. They're all so close in my mind. Roby, right. our number one fan at Remotes One on Twitter, Roby writes, as Noah Hawley stated in an interview, he wrote this season with Mike's backstory in mind. COVID made him have to cut content that would have fleshed out more of the character progression that Dean felt the show missed. That is why the last few episodes felt rushed. As far as the satchel not displaying any of Mike's mannerisms and styles, season two is at least 20 years later. We humans do a lot of growing and changing of our personalities, ideals, and taste in fashion between 15 and 20 years old, and even more between 20 and 30. So, of course, you're not going to recognize an older, wiser Mike in preteen satchel. Yeah, Dean, duh. I'm just going to add that.
Duh. Thanks, Roby.
Okay. The reason Orietta Mayflower was looking at her reflection in the car window is the same reason she watched her victims die so intently. It's also why she wanted them to shoot Josto first. She wanted to watch his death, then she wanted to watch her own death. Overall, I rate this season third in ranking. Season one and two tied for first. Season three is fourth.
Okay.
By the way, the typewriter shop was in Fargo. The store Milligan went to get money from the wall was in Kansas. Yes, I'm sure. Thank you, Roby. Thank you for confirming that from our conversation from last episode. I appreciate that.
Good. All right, we only have a little bit of time left with Tim. Tim, I wanted to ask you, and I mentioned this pre-show, but I did want to expand upon this. So Disney basically slapped its dick down on Hollywood yesterday. And when we're recording this, yesterday was would have been Thursday, December 10th, had an investors meeting and basically decided that, hey, we're going to take over entertainment for the next 3 years at least. But mainly just TV-wise, they announced 10 to 15 Marvel television shows and about 10 plus Star Wars television shows, not to include even just the regular Disney, Pixar, those kind of things. I know you said you didn't really care for this very much, but was there anything from this announcement that you're excited about?
Yeah, I like that Hayden Christensen is going to be playing Darth Vader.
Yeah, of course, right?
Why is that?
As long as they don't put him on a desert planet, you know, because he hates sand. It gets everywhere.
All right, let me say this. George Lucas is not writing any of the dialogue, and he's not directing. So there's a plus. And Hayden Christensen is actually a decent actor. So, yeah. And he's older. And who knows what the scenes are going to be. It's speculative at this point. But I want to see the Obi-Wan show.
What about the other Mandalorian spinoffs, the Ahsoka Tano? And there's a couple others that are going to be like spinoffs of so if you remember two episodes ago, the Jedi episode with Rosario Dawson's character. So she's going to have her own show. And there's going to be, I think,
that I'll care about that all that.
So there's going to be, I think, one other episode. And basically what they're planning is, you know, like a multiverse a shared universe where eventually it will be like a combined.
Well, let's go back to something we said in the Fargo discussion. She was Anakin's Padawan. But the only way you would know that is if you watched the Clone Wars part two.
Yep.
And if you didn't watch that, which I'm sure a lot of people did, but a lot of people didn't that are into the movies, you don't know anything about that. So I don't really know much about that character. All I know is that that character was really, really good. Rosario Dawson was really, really good in that episode. So I might watch that. The one that made me laugh, though, is they're taking one from that guy in Rogue One, and they're making a series out of that.
Yeah,
like,
Andor.
Who the fuck? I'm sorry. Who the hell's going to watch that?
Yeah. Oh, you can say
why that guy sucked. That he was the worst character in the entire movie.
Diego Luna.
Yeah, but I get why they're doing it. I mean, it's demographics, and that's why they're doing. But
what about Marvel shows where basically the shows are now part of the MCU, and it's like you got to watch the shows.
I don't care about Marvel at all whatsoever. I will say this: Mandalorian has done something that I never thought would happen, is to get me interested in Star Wars again. So I just finished season one of Rebels, which, I mean, the writing isn't that great, but it's a good show.
That's what I really like about The Mandalorian, is that if you didn't watch those Clone Wars or Rebels animated shows, which, you know, especially most adults probably didn't, you know, Dave Filoni is the other showrunner with Jon Favreau, and he's the one that ran both those shows. It actually gets you interested to go back to watch something that actually, if you had watched those, that was the best Star Wars in the past 10 years, you know, aside from the movies.
Did you guys watch Rebels?
I've watched it with my kids. We've watched it on like Cartoon Network, you know, for the past several years.
I've watched some show. Clone Wars, and I've seen some of the Knights of the Old Republic game, but I've not watched Rebels.
Yeah. Well,
Rebels is good.
I'm like, sure.
The some of the dialogue is really bad, but
yeah, but
you got to let story that slide. Is good. The story is good, and the fact that they have Grand Moff Tarkin, and now I just finished the first season, so Darth Vader shows up at the end. It's cool. And I'm gonna watch
with Clone Wars where you find out like how Darth Maul has come back and he was actually still part of the game and everything.
Another thing with Boba Fett being there and how cool he was fighting in that scene they shot on the set of MASH. I'm sorry, Dukes of Hazzard. I mean, you're talking about
Boba Fett, right?
Yeah, Boba Fett.
Come on.
But it was such a good episode. But then to go back and find out, oh, I didn't know that there's all this lore about him. And they basically confirmed that his father, Jango, was a Mandalorian. So I went back and looked at it. And that leads you down the road of, well, maybe Mace Windu is still alive because you don't know what happened to Mace Windu. Right. So there's so much cool shit that can happen that I'm buying back into that. After I finish Rebels, I'm going to go back and I watched a couple episodes of Clone Wars, but I'm going to watch that.
Mm-hmm. What I've loved about this Mandalorian is, and I read this, is that, and so I'm stealing this a little bit from something, but the idea that the Mandalorian has, you know, even the fact that they've brought in mitochlorians and stuff, calling them the M count, but they're like fixing the mistakes of the prequels, and they're also somewhat fixing the mistakes of the new series too. The idea of, I can't wait to find out what Jedi ends up taking Grogu eventually, because it's got to be someone we know at some point. So I can't wait.
It's gonna be Luke.
I'm with you. I'm more what you said earlier. I would love to see a Mace Windu coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the fact that, like, I want to see the television, you know, with theaters in complete question marks at this point. I would love to see television. That was my biggest thing from the Disney thing. It looks like they're pouring a lot of money into television as opposed to movies. And I think The Mandalorian has shown you can make movie caliber television series, you know, almost the HBO model with Game of Thrones and stuff, but even better. I think Mandalorian is the best television show production value wise ever, as far as every episode's a movie.
And its simplicity, at least until the last two episodes, has been, to me, its selling point. Its simplicity of beginning, middle, and end every single episode.
All right, you know? Tim, well, I know we're running out of time with you, so we really appreciate you coming and joining us tonight, and thank you for all of your thoughts. You know, hey, whenever you're ready to welcome us back to the Radio Labyrinth space, we will gladly click our buttons and zoom in with you. You know, Dustin Lawler can't be there, or, you know, whatever, let us know and we'll definitely join in and talk whatever with you. We would love to do a Redbox Mad Lib, is all I'm saying.
Well, I'd love to have you do that. Lisa, Dean's a good showrunner. I'll just leave you with that. Thanks for having me on, guys.
I agree. He is. Thank you, Tim. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, that was fun having Tim on.
As always.
Thanks, Tim, for joining us. You know, before we move completely away from The Mandalorian, I want to say this. Thinking about the franchise of all the Star Wars toys over the years, as soon as Grogu's name was revealed, it got me thinking, all of those toys that have been produced so far that are labeled the child are now like doubled in value, because everything going forward is going to be called Grogu. So,
good thing I ordered both my daughters like eight Funko Pops of the child for
Christmas.
Keep that
packaging that says the child. It will be important one day, maybe 20 years from now. You'll be a millionaire.
So we didn't talk about really the plot of Mandalorian very much. I know we haven't spoken since the child has been taken. Grogu's been taken by Moff Gideon. One of my favorite scenes was him when he walks in to find him and he's just throwing those stormtroopers around with the Force. Fucking awesome.
Such a badass Grogu, man. But then they put him in those little tiny
little shackles. Why do they have handcuffs that small?
Who makes handcuffs that small?
Right? They're like, hey, we might have to take some babies at some point. Mm-hmm. We gotta have small handcuffs.
Moff Gideon, he's prepared. I said, only Gus Fring could be so mean to that little Grogu. He's the only one.
Have you seen that meme going around, which I'm not sure is actually true or not, but there's the meme going around where it's like supposedly a quote from Giancarlo Esposito. It's like saying like, I have four daughters and they love Baby Yoda, the child, and they text and call me like after this last episode and we're like, please don't hurt that child. And I told them like, I'm going to murder that big-eared bastard or something like that. Like just something ridiculous like that. But it doesn't sound like it's a true thing, but I did like the idea that even in real life, Gus Fring would be telling his own children like, nah, he's my enemy. Fuck him. I'm going to kill him.
Only the man that could slice his, you know, own lieutenant's man with a box cutter.
That's right.
Could kill this little precious little baby Grogu. Now, speaking of the Moff Gideon's Dark Vaders or whatever, his Dark Stormtroopers that he unleashed. Well, how did you like that scene? Because I just thought that was pretty badass. Did you not?
I love them coming in, and I like, but to me, the whole buildup of them, and then like even in the episode where like, are the Dark Troopers ready? Are they coming down? Could you have at least gotten one of them to like, you know, basically not necessarily kill, obviously, but defeat Mando and Finnick at that point? Because they just fly in, grab him. Mm-hmm. There's no fight whatsoever, and they fly off. So to me, it's like, okay, are they really that badass, or did they just pick up a sleeping child and fly his ass away? I would have at least like one of them, as almost as if like Mando and Finnick were about to get there just in time, and it like would literally only take one of them to just like, you know, shoot a bunch of shit at them or something to make them have to scatter enough to just show how intimidating they are. To me, it was just like they just like big Transformers. They showed up, they grabbed him, they flew off. So I kind of was underwhelmed by that, to be honest.
Yeah, I can see that. No, I was glad to see Fennec return, though.
Yeah, I love that actress. That was awesome. Not that I wasn't disappointed with them, but like I just, for that to be their introduction, they didn't do anything.
We'll see more of them.
Oh, I would. If we don't, then I will be very disappointed with the whole concept of the Dark Troopers
and the Razor Crest. I mean, he, like a badass, just like zeroed it on that ship and blew that to hell and back. So, and all that's left is the little ball.
So like
Grogu's little toy and the spear,
the Beskar spear. So surely, we can. I'm gonna go ahead and make the prediction. And I will say this seems like it would be a clear, easy prediction, but I haven't actually seen this anywhere, but maybe I just haven't been looking in the right places, but I haven't seen this on anything. I'm going to make the prediction that Boba Fett will die in the finale. And Mandalorian's going to take over Slave One.
Okay.
Because he needs a ship, clearly.
Mm-hmm. I like that prediction.
Just makes the most sense. Considering in the Disney, all the shows for Star Wars that they announced yesterday for Disney, there was not a Boba Fett spinoff. There was an Ahsoka Tano spinoff. There was a couple other spinoffs that dealt with the Mandalorian or that were like said that, or that even though they weren't characters we've seen yet in the Mandalorian, they've like specifically said this takes place during the events of the Mandalorian. They're going to do like how the Marvel shows did a couple years ago, where they all like are going to lead into some kind of shared, you know, semi-episode event type of thing. And there was not a Boba Fett episode. So I'm going to make the assumption or make the prediction Boba Fett will die in the finale. We have one episode left. I know you haven't finished this week's episode left, but I didn't spoil anything for you, but this episode, nothing major happens. Basically a setup episode teeing off for the finale.
The return of Bill Burr was all I needed. Bill Burr,
and he's great. He's great in it.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, I gotta go podcast now. I'll watch it later. But
yeah, you know, he's good in it. But there's no like twist, no deaths, no additions. It's just, it really is a setup episode. In fact, like it was a good episode, but it was actually almost, it was very much like a peak, and this is a valley ready for I think another peak. I think it's gonna ramp up obviously in the finale. But I'll make that prediction that Boba Fett will die in the finale, and Mando will take over the Slave One.
Okay, I like that prediction a lot. a couple other predictions I want to ask you about, because it is this, you know, it will be episode 8 in just 1 week from today. And that is the season 2 finale. Will Grogu be rescued, or will they leave that hanging?
I think he'll get rescued. I think he'll get rescued, but we're going to, because he still has to, like, the whole overarching story is still, like, you know, we almost thought at the beginning of the season, especially, and they almost, like, teased it with Ahsoka Tano, that he was getting Grogu to where he needs to be. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't where he needed to be. So I do think he will rescue him.
Don't you think where Grogu needs to be is with Mandalorian? Don't you think that's going to be the moral at the end of this story?
Clearly what Mando wants, because it's so clear that Mando just, that, like, even last episode when he's like, I have to take you there. I can't train you myself. I you know, don't you understand? I can't do it. It's going to have to be somebody else. Like, you can tell, it's like, it's like when you're taking a dog to, like, be adopted, you know, it's like, I'm sorry, you don't get along with our other dog. I want you, but someone else is better for you. Like, it's that idea.
Or how about when he kept going, Grogu? And Grogu and he'd be like, yes. Like, he was so happy that he knew his name and he could finally communicate with him.
Yeah.
Those two will never be separated again after this. So that's why I'm wondering if they'll keep it. They'll keep them apart a little while longer than
I can't imagine how you keep the show going once those two are split and it's as good as it is.
Yeah,
because it's silly as much as, like, the whole Baby Yoda thing at first. You know, a lot of people were like, oh, it's such a Disneyfication marketing thing with Baby Yoda. And it clearly is. But at the same time, it works.
It works. Completely. It
works every episode. He never isn't adorable, even when he's laying there with his little handcuffs on.
I know.
When the dark troopers are flying off with him and he's just looking down and his ears are flapping, he's adorable.
Remember SWD, squeal with delight.
Yeah.
Hashtag SWD.
Yeah, that one episode where he's just got his hands up in the Razor Crest. I don't know. I can't wait to see how it ends. I think Jon Favreau has crushed, obviously, this whole series. Mm-hmm. It shocks me that out of all the announcements they made with Disney yesterday in regards to the multiple Marvel series and the multiple Star Wars series, that he hasn't been named to be kind of the showrunner for some of these. He clearly is showing that he has the ability to almost be like a... how Kevin Feige is with Marvel, where he's like this architect of how everything puts together.
Yes.
I feel like Favreau could do this right now with Star Wars. And maybe he is. Maybe he is going to be this guy with all these. But it shocks me that Marvel hasn't picked him back up, because, you know, if it wasn't for Jon Favreau, we wouldn't have had Iron Man and we wouldn't have had the MCU. Mm-hmm. So Favreau is... He's a genius, man. Like, it's so crazy that you go from, you know, the schlubby swingers guy to what he is now. But he's masterful at this.
We wouldn't have had Elf without John.
Oh, yeah, we wouldn't have. So, you're not allowed to watch Elf anymore, Lisa, because I know you've, in fact, are a Republican, and Elf is only for Democrats now. So. But we won't get into that.
No. Going back to Roby, just before we leave Mandalorian, Roby's email. Thank you again, Roby, for writing us in. And anybody who wants to write us an email, we'll read it on air. It'll make you semi-famous, maybe.
You literally can write us anything in an email.
Anything.
We don't care what it is. It can be had nothing to do with television. It could be like your grocery list. But if you put your name on it, we will read it and we will credit you for it. Just send us an email, man.
You could be a dick to us like Tim
doesn't matter. We'll read it. We'll read it. Good,
Mike
bad,
TV
ugly.
podcast@gmail.com. Anyway, Roby goes on to say, really recommend you watch Star Wars Rebels. Oh, yeah. On Disney Plus. There's a lot of backstory for the recent characters introduced in Mandalorian. Now, granted, Roby wrote this email like, you know, a week and a half ago. And then he finally says, just rewatch the original Star Wars trilogy, and Boba Fett was pretty ineffective in combat. Not at all the badass he was in the latest episode. Liked this version better. I'll send you my top 20 of 2020 next time. Oh, we'll get to that. Well,
so here we go. I have a very hot take here. I'm 100% agreeing with Roby. I know that doesn't happen very often.
Uh-oh.
Actually, to more so, Roby will be surprised that he agrees with something I've said, and it'll make him upset. He'll probably send a redaction next week.
Uh-oh. But
I 100% agree. I've never understood why Boba Fett is such a popular character. Yeah, he looks cool with the helmet, but in the original series, he doesn't really do anything. He doesn't even capture Han Solo. Han Solo gets tricked by, or gets double crossed by Billy Dee Williams, and then he just throws him in the carbonite. He didn't do anything.
Landon Calrissian.
Yeah, and then he gets his ass kicked in Return of the Jedi, and Luke literally just hits like the back of his backpack, and he shoots off and gets knocked into the Sarlacc pit. So yeah, Boba Fett kind of sucked in the original.
Okay, so let's retcon this and say that Boba Fett became the badass that he is because he had to escape the Sarlacc pit. He had to get his armor back. He's been through hell and back. So, yeah, of course, over the years, he has become a badass.
To me, it's like the original Boba Fett is kind of like the satchel.
And oh, God.
The new Boba Fett is like Mike Milligan. And I just don't see a connection there. I just don't see the connection.
All right. Well, yet again, we'll agree to disagree. But good one, Roby. You and Dean agree for once. Something
what else
have
you been watching?
Yeah. Well, we talked about The Undoing our last episode, and you have completed it. It has ended. You want to talk about the ending real quick of The Undoing? Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
I liked it overall. I liked the show. In fact, mm-hmm. I was... As the finale happened, so it is Hugh Grant the whole time.
Uh-huh.
I kind of didn't like that at first. I kind of was like, okay, that wasn't like, why were we going through all this if it was just him the whole time?
Yeah. But
then Hugh Grant deserves all the awards because his, like, I love, like, I mean, from the fact that you don't think it's him for most of the show and
yeah.
then his mental break at the end.
Yeah.
I loved it. Like I love seeing Hugh Grant. Like, Hugh Grant's always been the charming.
Yes.
He's not crazily attractive, but he's somehow the charming British man. And he was the charming British man in this. But then all of a sudden, he's smashing bitches' faces with a hammer.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's going crazy, almost kidnapping his son. And like, I love his acting saved the show for me. I was
yeah.
actually very upset the first half of that final episode, but then his acting crushed it, and I was 100% in by the end.
Well, and the interesting twist in this is how Nicole Kidman's character Grace worked the angle to get herself on the stand by the defendant, had to get called by the defendant so that she would be able to answer ultimately the prosecutor's questions the way she wanted to answer them.
Right.
And then that was her, little secret that we didn't hear the audience when she and her friend Lily Rabe took the walk and said, she said, I need you to do something for me. And that's what she did in the bathroom was tell that prosecutor,
what
the questions
about his
to
mother
ask.
And all, yeah. All
yeah. Stuff. About the, yeah. And so the way all that came together and the way she worked that angle to protect her son, right? Because her son fucked with the evidence.
Right.
And that this was the only way to get out from under Mr. Crazy Husband, but also still keep her son protected.
Yeah,
and that part was really brilliant. Really,
I was
really,
really
good.
I was really hoping in the first half of the episode, what was happening was I realized what she was doing, but I almost was hoping it was going to turn out to where the son did do it. And she realized basically she was picking her son over the husband. And like, even though she knew he did it, she was protecting the son over the husband. That's what I was kind of like, oh, this will be good. If that's what, cause how he even seemed surprised. We're like, she's fucked us and all this stuff. Like I thought that was where it was going, but then of course he picks up the son and he's going batshit crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, his performance, Hugh Grant's performance was hands down masterful for that show.
Yeah. So it was good. Ultimately, it wasn't my favorite, but for a little mini series,
it's done. Yeah. It's done.
Yeah. David E. Kelly, not as good as Big Little Lies, but it was pretty good.
Speaking of David E. Kelly.
Yeah. His other show right now. So you're watching it, right? I'm watching it. Big Sky on ABC. Oh my God.
Yeah. I really liked the first episode.
Yes.
But even then, did I like the first episode, or did I just love the ending of the first episode? When he shot Ryan Philippe. Yeah, so again, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Yeah, when Ryan Philippe gets his head blown off in the very end of the first episode, I was like, I'm down with this, because that's what bought me into Utopia, when they shot the girl in the second episode of, like, who you think is going to be one of the main characters, and they shoot him in the head and kill him.
And then she lies on the floor for, like, three more episodes, but yeah.
But even the first episode, I was seeing early on that, like, man, the dialogue in this and the drama in this is so, not even network. It was like daytime television drama acting style. And then it gets worse each episode. Like the two main lead female actresses, the wife and the adulterer, or, you know, the mistress, they're just terrible.
The mistress actress is not good.
Yeah,
I have commented on her. I've talked to my mom about this. I'm like, you know, I want to like these two women, and I kind of like the blonde okay, but the other one.
No, I think they're both terrible.
She's really bad, and they keep giving her these, like, big dramatic crying scenes, and she cannot do them, and that is bad. And they just linger on her. It is bad. Yeah, that's.
The girls
in captivity.
They're actually all good. All those actresses are very good. Their story's kind of silly, but they're good. Both the sisters and the trans actress, they're great.
The truck driver and his mom.
And then, of course, you have John Carroll Lynch. John Carroll Lynch is really the only reason I watched the show, because I love John Carroll Lynch. He's fantastic in everything he's in. And once you find out he's, you know, on the bad guy's side, I love that idea. I love the episode where he's hunting the girl who escapes and, you know, shooting her with the arrows twice, just, like, frustrated about it. He's so good at being especially in this, being a calm psychopath, you know, like, where it's just like to him, it's like everything's like eye roll inducing. Like, he's crazy, and he's obviously trying to traffic these women and kidnap them. But everything, like, I love the. So you said you haven't watched the most recent episode.
I've gotten to where, let's see, I've seen them put the maggots on her leg. I'm like halfway through it.
There's one line, I think it was in this last episode, where he tells Ronald the truck driver. Yes. And he's like, Ronald, clearly you kidnapped the wrong women. And just, I love the way he just delivers that line of just like, we're both terrible people, but you made a mistake of just like, you kidnapped the wrong women. So here's my biggest thing is in real life, wouldn't they have just killed these three people by this point? Like, why haven't they just put bullets in all three of these women's
heads? I think because they're worth money to them. I think they're not really out to kill people. But they are out to make money. Off these women.
That's why they remember, because they were going to get rid of the trans girl and ship her, and then she showed that she was trans and they put her back in, and she even made the comment like, I'm not what they wanted to do. So why didn't they just kill her and bury her like they bury everything else?
I know they can bury freaking cars with no problem, so it seems like killing and burying people not an issue. I mean, I think there's a side to John Carroll Lynch's character that he really doesn't want to kill people. He is trying to get what he considers, like, he's trying to cleanse America, right? Trying to get the trashy people out of America, which he considers prostitutes.
By trafficking them as sex.
Trafficking them to Canada, essentially. And so I don't think, his MO is not to kill them.
Get
them
to Canada. That's right. Yeah. Send that trash to Canada. I can get behind that.
And I mean, maybe he's thinking, you know, maybe there's still a market. I don't think he knows that she's trans yet. Only Ronald knows, right? Ronald, I don't think, has told him.
No, he told, because he even asked at one point, he's like, are you sure she has male genitalia, like in the second episode or something like that.
So maybe he's still trying to find him. There's got to be a market.
Surely there's got to be a market for that, right? Yeah.
I agree. The simple thing would be just to kill them, but obviously then we wouldn't have a show here. And that is fundamentally what makes it kind of dumb, is because it's like, okay, if they're able to cover up crap this easily, and he kills a private detective without giving it a second thought, then clearly these three women could be easily disposed of.
Yeah,
and it was a 10 episode order, and they've just they just announced today that they've picked it up for an additional 6 episodes this season.
No way.
How is it going to be 16 episodes, Dean? How?
No, I can't imagine. In fact, I was just saying there's no way this is going to last more than one season. That can be my only thought, is that they like it enough to conclude it. Like David E. Kelly, in fact, it must just be because it's David E. Kelly writing it. Like he must have some, like, where it's like, well, give me enough time to conclude it. It's going to be a one series thing, right? A one season series. And they basically talked him into giving me six episodes to finish it up. There's no way this can last more than one season.
Well, you know, there's that whole church thing. I mean, there's a whole,
which they haven't even mentioned in two episodes, and it doesn't have anything to do with anything.
And I'll tell you what's really pissing me off is that they've barely shown the perspective of the girl's mother. And I don't know if they've brought her in more in this more recent episode, but
yeah,
they've shown like the blonde detective talking to her on the phone. And I'm like, bullshit. This girl's mother would be up their asses hysterical.
The secretary of the private investigation, she's in on it. No, she's in on it.
You think?
Oh, 100%. I thought that from the very first time when she's like, oh, this cop is weird. And she's like, oh no, surely, like, she's in on it. She knows. I guarantee she, I'm calling that now. She knows it. She's in on it.
I'll be interested in seeing if that's true, because I was liking her. I like how
she's always like playing dumb, like whenever it comes to any questions about that. Like she seems like she's like obviously playing dumb about things. I think she's in on it. Either that or just bad writing. One of the two.
Yeah, probably a combination of both.
Probably the other one. So, all right. What have you been watching anything else lately?
You know, I have not. We talked about...
So I started The Queen's Gambit. This has been a very popular show over the past month and a half.
Also a limited series, right? Just one and done season, or is it...
Oh, I don't know. Probably. No. I don't know. I haven't. I just know I've been hearing about this. So even
I
want to
watch
why,
it. I
so
do.
I saw the, you know, I've seen it on Netflix. The reason I even started watching it, like, because I knew it had something to do with chess. I'm an economics teacher, and in our economics teacher Facebook groups and stuff, this show has been all over the place, because apparently in the past month and a half since this show has been out, Google searches for how to play chess sets, et cetera, have gone up by like 10 times. Chess sets are apparently hard to find right now because people are all into chess because of this show.
Wow.
Now, good. I don't know how true that is, but that's
everybody should
the
get
internet.
Into chess. I agree. It's whatever. A great game.
So,
awesome.
So I started watching. So if you watch the preview, like the, you know, how when you go over the show of it, like it shows a little preview, the preview shows like this cute redhead bangs girl, signing up for a chess tournament. And they're basically like, are you ranked? She's like, I've never played in a tournament before. They're like, okay, you got to play in beginner. She's like, I don't want to play in beginner. I want to play in the Champions League or whatever. And they're like, oh, you got to be ranked, blah, blah, blah. She's like, is there a rule? They're like, no. She's like, all right, I want to play it. So it's basically seems like it's like, you know, this woman chess player who's going to break into the men's chess league or whatever. So I'm like, okay, cool, whatever. I got daughters. They're, you know, cool, whatever.
Sure.
So I start watching it. We've only watched one episode. The first episode starts off as this girl is basically waking up in a hotel room with some strange man in the bed that she's apparently slept with. She chugs a bunch of alcohol and takes a bunch of pills and runs out the door to start a chess match. She's late too, and about to start a chess match. And I'm like, okay. And then the whole first episode is a flashback of her in an orphanage as a child, where she basically becomes a pill addict, like a Xanax pill addict. And that's what helps her learn how to play chess, because when she takes these pills at night, she can like visualize the chessboard on the ceiling of her orphanage bedroom and see the chess pieces going back and forth. And so she becomes basically a drug addict at like the age of, I think she's like 10 or 11 or something like that. And it's super interesting, and it's super good. And she's learning how to play chess through like the janitor of this orphanage she's in. But at the same time, like I said, she's basically becoming a pill addict at the whole time. And then the first episode ends, and this isn't like a spoiler for the season or anything, but the first episode ends with this child. Basically, they have decided, like, a law has passed in the states where they're not allowed to give these kids tranquilizers anymore, because that's what they were basically doing. And she breaks into the drug, like the pharmaceutical room, the medical room of this orphanage, starts grabbing handfuls of pills, and like, instead of just like hoarding them, she starts just has a handful of pills and just like eats them out of her palm. And as she gets caught by the headmistress, she just passes out and collapses on the floor. And that's the end of the first episode. A child taking copious amounts of drugs, collapsing on the floor.
Why are people thinking I'm going to like this show? I don't understand.
I think it was fascinating. The first episode was great. The dialogue, the story, fantastic. And she's going to, I'm assuming each episode is going to be like a next point in her life as she's learning how to play chess and becoming a better and better chess player. It's super good. It's not just like a chess nerd show. That's what I liked about it. It was like, there's actually something going on with this character as opposed to she just learns chess. She's good at chess. No, apparently she's a drug addict. And that kind of helps her play chess. So I'm into it. Can't wait to keep watching it.
Yeah, I love chess. I'm a big chess nerd. I was on chess club. I was the girl among all the guys playing chess like back in the day. And
there's a good scene where she is invited to a high school nearby the orphanage, and she's brought in because the chess teacher is like, sees how good she is. And she basically comes in, the whole chess club, which is all guys sitting like a three square or not, a third of a square of table. And she has to play everyone at the same time. And she just crushes them. She just crushes all.
I will love that.
But yeah, I'm telling, like, you'll like it. Like in the whole like drug situation, like you'll love it. I'm telling you.
Okay.
You
gotta watch it. I will definitely check it out because I've been wanting to watch it. I have watched the trailer. It is on my, watch list. And let me lead into just a few, like, speaking of watch lists, things that have been renewed and canceled. We mentioned Utopia earlier. In a shocking surprise, it's been canceled. Why, Dean? Why?
I'm wondering if it just never it kind of slipped onto Amazon. And I'm thinking because of the whole pandemic, it wasn't really promoted. And I think that might just have led to very low ratings for it.
That is really shocking.
Because I know the British original had 3 or 4 seasons.
I thought only two.
Okay. Well, at least two. I knew it had a couple.
But there was more story. I mean, and that British version is hard to get a hold of. I think you have to like go through,
Yeah, and obviously Utopia clearly set up a second season.
Yeah.
Because you realize her father's there drawing the things to
What the hell? I'm shocked about it. I'm pissed. I'm really mad. But anyway, also in cancellation news, The Outsider on HBO, which we both ended up liking, weren't really completely sure how a second season would look. I know you had your, questions about it, especially, and it had been renewed, but now they've pulled back on that. And
really?
In fact, it's canceled.
So actually, Stephen King had a new book this year called If It Bleeds, and it was an anthology series that had 4 stories in it, but the main story was based off of Holly Gibney finding another outsider, another shapeshifter. And so it actually set up very, in fact, when I saw that it was renewed, I feel like, they're going to follow this story. It set it up perfectly for this story to be taken. Now, Ben Mendel has, Mendelsohn, his character would have been only a bookend character, like maybe in the very prologue and very epilogue, but it would have followed Holly Gibney following this whole other story. And it was and it's a great story. It's about basically she finds this reporter, this news reporter, who she realizes has been a news reporter for like 50 years, even though he always looks the same age and he's always following tragedy. So it's basically another outsider who follows, instead of killing people himself, he follows he causes tragedies, and then like he's a reporter. So he like sucks up the energy, from that concept or whatever. The idea is from it there, but it's a really good idea. It's called If It Bleeds.
I'll check it out. I love Stephen King, so yeah, you don't have to twist my arm on that. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, that's surprising that they, and to me, you wonder how many of these were just strictly, maybe they had the plans and it was like COVID and they worried just it was too long, or they just didn't want to deal with that or something. But yeah, that sucks.
It does say the producers are shopping, other networks, but HBO passes on you, I don't know. You're probably, it's not looking good. Some renewals though, Umbrella Academy was renewed for a third season.
Nice.
It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It was renewed for 4 more seasons. Like
that was
crazy
one of the that was one of the Disney announcements yesterday. Yeah.
That's part of Disney.
Well, they bought Fox, remember? So yeah, FX, all that falls under them.
It's crazy.
There's going to be, oh, did you hear the Noah Hawley news?
No.
Noah Hawley is going to be making an Aliens series, like based off Aliens, like Xenomorphs Aliens. Like it's going to be a series from Noah Hawley on FX.
That will be fucking great.
That'll be crazy.
Okay, we'll definitely be talking about that one.
It'll be crazy.
Handmaid's Tale was renewed for a 5th season ahead of its 4th season that hasn't even aired yet because it was delayed.
Considering season 3 sucked. Yeah, well, fantastic.
Fear of the Walking Dead, I don't even know how, but was renewed for a 7th season. 7th.
Okay.
Yeah. All Creatures Great and Small, which is a show I'm greatly anticipating. It's coming out on Masterpiece PBS this January. Already aired in England, of course, but it's coming our way, and it's already been renewed for a 2nd season too. You know, All Creatures Great and Small, James Herriot story. I love some James Herriot stories. He was a veterinarian in the 30s and 40s in rural England, and he wrote about all these animals that he cared for and treated. Oh, you're just shaking your head. Whatever.
No clue.
I got to go back to Hyperdrive where you guys were talking about your dogs and like medical bills. Cause I had to take my cat to the emergency room today. And I was like, okay, what is the price where you're like, what do I spend? You know, I mean, fortunately I got out of there with $175.
Oh, that's cheap. Yeah.
I know, very cheap, but they wanted to do x-ray. They wanted to do all this stuff. And I was like, it was weird. He wouldn't eat and he was drooling. Oh, and I was like, I think, can't you just give him something for nausea and let's see how he does? And they were like, oh yeah, we can do that. So they gave him injection for nausea and fluids and sent him home. And now he's like 100% better.
Cool.
I know. It's like, I'm glad I didn't spend money on x-rays and all that. Anyway. And finally, and I only put this on here just for you, Dean, my friend, you already know this. I know The Masked Singer renewed for a 5th season.
Yep. This season starts, I think, January 1st or like right in the first week of January, I believe.
They just renewed it. How could it start already?
Because they already knew it was there.
Oh, yuck.
They already knew it was there. It was a trick.
You know.
I think they filmed the whole thing in like 3 days.
Let's talk about what we're going to be doing in our next episode, because I have no doubt you'll bring up Masked Singer again and again in that episode. As we round out the year, we are going to finish out the year with our best of, our top shows of 2020. We're going to try to do a top 20 list. We have some concerns we won't get to 20. The rules are the show had to air for the first time in 2020. It can be any season. It can be a new, like a, you know, like Fargo season 4 aired in 2020, it counts, but it had to be newly aired in 2020. And you know, I mentioned this before we started recording, but it bears repeating, hard to believe, Better Call Saul aired in 2020.
Yeah, so, our last episode by episode recap. Yeah.
So remember that, folks, if you want to send us some suggestions as we compile that list. I know Dean needs his memory jogged.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to like, because I'm even thinking like, was Watchmen? No, that was 2019. Yeah, was Westworld? No, that was 2019.
No, Westworld.
Was Westworld 2020? This 2020?
Oh,
good.
Then
I can at least put that somewhere. Good. I can put that somewhere. I'll throw that somewhere out there.
Good. I had forgotten all about Westworld.
Yeah, right. I don't know, man.
Mm. Anyhow,
Tiger King. Tiger King.
How dare you? I just can't even go there. You will not see Tiger King or Masked Singer on my list. Good.
You'll see it on mine.
This feels like a good place to wrap up.
Oh, cool.
So everybody, remember, send in suggestions for top 20 of 2020 to miketvpodcast@gmail.com.
You can also send us anything on Twitter at MikeTV1 or at Rockdale_Tiger. We will gladly speak back to you. I will speak back to you immediately. Lisa will speak back to you within the next week to two.
Oh, come on. I'm getting better.
Depending on when she shows back up on Twitter. But I will respond to you immediately. Clemson hasn't had a game this past weekend. So I'm willing to talk to you about non-sports activities and until the next weekend happens.
And you've got a whole other list of topics for Hyperdrive. I mean, let's
right.
Hey, I hope that the walls don't bleed together between Mike TV and Hyperdrive. How are you going to keep it separated, Dean?
No, they will a little bit. Hey, if you guys want another podcast to listen to hear me and my my best friend Jared talk about just complete bullshit stuff, we just
it's really good though. It's not complete bullshit. It's good. It really is.
We're trying, but it's two good friends that have chemistry in the sense of we've known each other forever. So if you want to hear two friends that you don't know anyone about talk about things, or you just need something to fill the time, hey, it's Christmas break coming up soon, mm-hmm. so you're gonna need some time when you're walking, or you know, you want to waste some time away from your family. Look up Hyperdrive. We are on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, all the podcatchers. You can find us at Hyperdrive Pod on Twitter. Find us there. So
I like hype it. I like hype it or wipe it segment.
Yes. Yes.
We and then you also had a
section.
Yeah. You had a great,
we either hype things up or we wipe it out off the slate.
Yeah. I liked that. And you got a little wacky in your wokeness episode with the hype it or wipe it. I was like, yes. I don't know about hyping that, but okay. It was so funny. And,
we promise we're not hyping white supremacy. That's not on there. We wiped that.
Got really funny. You guys are so funny. The episode before, you went in great detail on how to survive many, many different animal attacks. So yeah, I do believe I am very prepared now if I'm ever attacked by, say, a mongoose.
So our next Hyperdrive episode, if you're interested, we will be actually reviewing a movie in the Christmas season, and that is the movie Jack Frost from 1997. That is not the Michael Keaton movie where a father dies and becomes a loving snowman. That is the horror comedy movie Jack Frost, where a murderous sociopath is doused with acid and becomes a killer snowman and kills many people in many ridiculous ways. We'll be talking about that. And then after that, we'll be doing a full-on Christmas episode where we'll talk about every Christmas special that's there. We'll be hyping and wiping all of the claymation Christmas episodes of everything. So if you're a fan of Rudolph or Frosty or Herbie or any of those, we're going to decide whether those characters decide to if they're worth it or not. So
please, it's Hermie.
That's what Hermie.
Well, I love it. And I appreciate that you also still take time to do Mike TV.
Please, of course. Cause we try not to stick. I try to not bleed too much. We talk a little bit.
I know you do a good
entertainment
job.
News, but we don't do too much TV stuff. So
it is good. It is good. I really enjoy it. It's a good, a lot of fun, but hey, our best episode of the year is yet to come. So stick That's around, right. folks. Top 20 are, you know, people are saying that when we do our top lists of the year, those are the best episodes of all
people
time.
People are saying, they're all saying it's the best episode of the year. It's the greatest episode.
So you don't want to miss it.
Yeah. And if people say it's not, we're going to send lawsuits to Texas, Georgia, Michigan, anywhere else that says it's not the best episode of the year. We're going to be filing suits in all those states. So. Be on the lookout. Rudy Giuliani's coming for y'all. Don't say this isn't the best episode.
Tim was on it, so it was probably it's pretty good.
This might be the best episode, sure. Might be the best. Hey, it's gonna lead to Tim Andrews may be on the next episode.
Let's start Keyword that may. Rumor.
Keyword may.
Let's just get Jeff Lieboff on. That's who we really want. Right? Jeff, we're really coming for you. We're coming for you, Jeff. All right. So thanks again, Dean. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And until next time, I'm Lisa.
And I'm Dean.
Please remember to
keep it thorough.